Welcome to Digital Rage. My name is Jeff Beyer.
My name is Matt Ramage.
And today we have a guest. And Matt, who do we have?
All right, Tom Reynolds is on the show. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah. So Tom is a sales and marketing expert in the manufacturing industry and runs an agency called the Reynolds Group. He's also in a band called The Misplaced Priorities, and if we have enough time at the end of the show, I'll have him do a plug for his band. And Tom and I have been working together for the last, I would say, 10 years. In the internet world, that is like 30 years. And Tom's a great guy, and excited to talk to him about a bunch of different things, but he is definitely a sales and marketing professional, so I'm glad to have him on the show and excited to hear what he has to say. So Tom, why don't you give us let's jump right into your background first, and maybe why don't you tell us how you got started and maybe just software development.
You bet. I actually started off, graduated from Stanford University and went to work for my family business. They were manufacturers. We made mechanical machines that made signs at the point of purchase for retailers. So every Sears and Montgomery Ward's, if people are old enough to remember those stores, Macy's, put one of our sign machines in the back of their store, and they made point of purchase signs. And the way we sold those machines was to teach people how to write copy and communicate at the point of sale. And I've always felt that was really relevant to the internet world, because you get about 5 seconds to catch someone's attention when it comes to communicating at the point of sale as they're passing a piece of merchandise. So in the late 70s, we realized we had to develop a software to do the same thing, because computers were coming along, and started doing some development. And then the IBM came out with the PC, and we immediately switched over to DOS and developed the first computers, actually, that were PCs that were put into retailers. We actually even beat some of the cash register companies in terms of producing signs. And we went on a 10-year run where we developed software for graphics primarily for retailers. And then that world became a commodity between Apple and Microsoft with Windows, and then also Japan Inc. in terms of output devices. So I went on a 10-year run to reinvent the company, early adapter on the internet, developed video signage that you see now, it's popular in gas stations and elevators. We actually were doing that in the 90s. Got ourselves kind of crossways with signing companies, so we had to not continue doing that. And then we started developing software in actually big data, which we were about 20 years early on that. And so starting in about 2002, I switched over and started doing consulting primarily with manufacturing companies, helping them with new technology, which at the time was websites, but we've gone on to do apps and other kinds of software for people, you know, the Internet of Things and all that good stuff. Work with Matt a lot on development and also digital marketing. And like I say, it's been a great 10-year run with you.
Nice. Well, Tom, I know that you lately have gotten into smarketing, which actually, I think when you brought it up to me, I was like, what? Was that a typo or... So, why don't you tell us what smarketing is and how you're, I guess, utilizing that. And why don't you tell us more about that?
Great. Thank you. Smarketing is a term I did steal. It is a real term out there. I think that actually the first people to use it was HubSpot. But my interpretation of the word is that it really combines sales and marketing. I think there's a huge imbalance in the world today. People are so enamored with this lead machine that a lot of it is internet driven that they've kind of forgotten the sales side of the equation. And so they may build beautiful websites. They may build websites that are easy to optimize and get leads from. But are those leads turning into sales? And so I kind of focus my marketing effort on helping people kind of balance or bring balance back in, bring in the sales side of the equation. So there are two types of leads in the world. There's marketing, qualified leads, which are MQL, and you've got sales qualified leads. So on the marketing side, you know, these are people that have to understand where the clients are, and they kind of can bring them in and speak to them, use the right medium, use the right social media, use the right search terms to go find those people. The other side of the equation is the sales qualified lead, which really is a more personal relationship with the customer, understanding what their needs are, you know, identifying objections and being able to close the sale. And what I'm seeing is that in all sizes of companies, there's a little bit of a disconnect between the sales qualified lead and the marketing qualified lead. And again, that's the balance I'm talking about, is that communication and support on both sides, that the sales supports the marketing and the marketing supports the sales. So that's what smarketing is all about, Matt.
Very nice. And I wanted to ask you about your manufacturing expertise and how audience identification works with a B2B manufacturer.
That's a great question. In my experience, you've got to be kind of targeted with B2B a little bit more with manufacturers than you are with, say, a B2C, because they have a narrow niche, and that niche may or may not be looking at social media, for example, to find their solutions. And so even I find things like LinkedIn, which is supposed to be kind of geared towards business, I find not quite as effective as it could be for a lot of the B2B people. One of the big issues really with B2B is that they're not writers. The majority of them aren't going to communicate and create content, which is really super important if you're going to kind of get into that world. They even have a hard time hiring people to write content. And so I find that you've got to figure out where that particular client's people hang out. You also have to figure out how those people buy. Again, that's the sales side of the equation. And then make sure your marketing is kind of supporting that. I can give you some stories if you'd like. Would that help a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Because I'm dealing with a B2B manufacturer right now and I think one of the biggest issues we're having is identifying their audience and where they are.
Right. So I have one client. He's a valve manufacturer. Okay, and he makes large valves that go on to ships at sea, primarily aircraft carriers, submarines, and destroyers. And they also that's probably about 60% of their business, and a growing part, but is the commercial side. They also do valves for high-rise buildings, and so we kind of did this smarketing study. And again, it's a process where really it kind of dives into strategy. A lot of people don't like that word or don't feel like they have time for it, but it's a pretty quick program to try to identify a couple things. One is that where are the sales bottlenecks? Who are the clients, and what do we need to do to make them happy? So this may or may not surprise you, but what it turned out to be was actually an operational issue that was limiting their sales on the commercial side. They're well known. They're a good company. You know, they've got a really strong brand. If you look at their search terms, the number one search term is their name. So why weren't they getting more commercial business? And it turned out that their delivery times were just way out of whack, which means the way they were handling inventory was out of whack. And basically it took setting up a system to go and look at how they can bring their delivery times from 3 or 4 weeks down to 8 days. You know, it's the Amazon effect, right? People expectations is to, if they call you, they'll ship you something overnight and the shipping will be free. Well, that's bled over to the manufacturing side. So I don't know if this really answers your question, but sometimes it's not what you expect. And it's really understanding what the customer wants as much as where the customers are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And, yeah. I was looking at it from a perspective of, it makes a lot of sense trying to reduce the time it takes to get products out. It's also one issue that we have with B2B manufacturers is that often they don't list their price because they deal with distributors.
Right, right. That's a big issue. And you know, it's interesting. I've been at this long enough to see how things have changed. When the internet first came out in the early 2000s, a lot of manufacturers were trying to go direct, and they actually went around their distributors, and they got burnt because the internet wasn't, for some companies it worked and some it didn't. And so you have to, the price thing is a problem, you know? And so you really have to go after the quality and the, you know, and support the dealers and help them get leads and build a website that actually supports the dealers. Matt and I have built a couple websites that are really designed looking at the dealer as the customer and not the end user as the customer. So we made it easier for them. So price wasn't the issue. Convenience was the issue. And again, the Amazon effect driving everybody to look that way.
Yep. Tom, would you mind diving a little deeper into just like what your smart game process looks like?
Sure. No, I'd love to do that. So, you know, it was designed by a guy named John Reynolds. Unfortunately, no relationship. He's from South Africa. He's the CEO of the online school at Azusa Pacific University. And I've kind of modified it to my purposes. But one thing I like about John is he takes complicated things like how do you develop a short-term strategy and make it digestible, easy, and something that's you can repeat. And so this marketing process really starts off by saying, why do you exist? You know, what is it? What problem do you solve? And I find that a lot of my clients tend to look at it from their perspective, which says, well, the problem I solve is that I provide a valve that, you know, will work great in a high-rise building. And from the customer's point of view, what he's providing is a set and forget solution, a valve that people can rely on. They don't have to replace. Yes, it's more expensive, but the lifetime value of the valve is much higher. So we kind of start by getting customers or getting my clients thinking in terms of how the customer looks at them. And once I kind of reset that in their head, the next thing we do is we really try to come up with a mission. And to me, a mission is something that's one sentence, maybe two max, and it just clearly states what you do. I make HVAC valves for the Navy and high-rise buildings. You know, it's just really simple. Everybody can understand it. And I call that the beginning of the process of planting the flag. You know, when you see the American flag, right, wrong, or indifferent, you know what country it stands for. You know, you hope you know the values that have driven that country, and you have enough sense to stand up and salute as it goes by. Well, the mission and the vision and the values really should give that to your employees so that they know what you stand for, they know what you do, and they know the values that drive your business. I'm a firm believer, Matt, that companies do business with other companies that have common shared values. And if you don't really tackle that value piece, you're going to end up with customers you don't like or customers that don't like you. And so I think knowing what you do, which is the mission, knowing where you want to go, which is a vision, and knowing the values that drive your business, which I've got some really interesting examples of some manufacturers that have done this beautifully. It really helps the employees. It helps the customers. It helps the vendors. And they do business with people that want to do business with them. So once you plant that flag, then the next process is really doing a SWOT, which is identifying your strengths and weaknesses, your threats and opportunities. Once you kind of establish these things, and that's just a mind dump. And it gets out of the marketing field a little bit, but it gets everything on the table that's concerning a client. And that's really what made me, enabled me to see that the inventory issue at that valve company was the problem. And then you take three of those things and say, I'm going to work on those three things. And invariably, one of them is going to be marketing. And the two others may be other issues that actually are beginning to affect your the flow through your sales process, you know, kind of grease the skids. So then you go through and you develop a SWOT. You take three things. You set up a way to measure those things. And again, using the valve company as my example, we put up on the board delivery times, and we're at, you know, at the time, 8 weeks. And we made it clear that we wanted to get that down to no more than 8 to 12 days. And it's amazing. Everybody in the organization got behind that and looked for ways to cut inventory, figured out what inventory could be stocked, what could things could be built. And we got the, you know, for their key products, we got it down to 8 days, which was kind of amazing to me. And then you go back and you start over again. And Matt, I believe that that's marketing is a process, not a one-time event. So you got to go back and you've experienced life in 90 days. And, you know, is your mission still relevant? Is your vision still clear? Are those the values, or have you added more values that you really think are important that need to be on that list? And then you revisit, you know, your SWOT. So that's really what this marketing program is. It's, you know, I get just to finish up, and I, you know, you don't get me started, Matt, because I'll talk all day. and you know that, is that I think one of the problems I have with most consultants, and I, you know, for 22 years, I hired consultants, is that they tell you what to do, but they don't tell you how to get ready to do what they're asking you to do. Where is the starting point? So if you ask a marketing person to come in and help you with your marketing, if you haven't done this initial process where they are clear on what you do, you know, where you're trying to go, and the things that the values that drive your business, it's really hard for a marketing consultant or a digital agency to come really be effective because they don't know this stuff. And so I see marketing as a really critical point for any company, so that when they bring in a consultant to help them with inventory, to help them with, you know, lean manufacturing, to help them with marketing, if they're clear on these things, it'll make that consultant 1,000 times more effective. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yep. Yeah, no, that's a ton of great info. Thank you so much, Tom. What, so typically, is this like a, you know, 2-month process, 3 months, or just or ongoing, or what do you...
Well, you know, I always tell people I can get it done in eight hours, but I think I may be the salesman in me when I say that. The hardest part is that first part, the mission, vision, values, you know, really planting that flag. And that can take a while because you got to keep come back and visiting it. You'll come up with something, let's say your mission, and you got to what I call wear it for a while. You got to try it on people. You got to see if it really does answer the question, or is there more to it than that? And the same thing happens with the vision. You know, you got to wear it for a while. Is that really where I'm trying to go? And then your values. I mean, I've got one client that's been working on his list of values for 2 years, and it keeps growing, and he's got it really coolly organized in terms of how it affects the employees, how it affects his suppliers, how it affects his management style. It's really quite an interesting process. So, as a salesman, I'll tell you 8 hours, but in truth, it's a lifelong process because you really got to kind of wear it and keep working it. And, it's a process. You know, I think life is a process. You know that, Matt.
So in onboarding a customer, it's obviously going to be, crucial that you have access to sales. Are you typically being hired or brought in by somebody from the marketing side, and they're hesitant to bring in sales?
So it's a very good question. I tend to work with manufacturers in the $5 to $20 million arena, and they tend to need someone to, they tend to be operationally minded. They've been successful because whatever they make or do, has resonance with a large enough client base that they're making money. Their problems are the ups and downs of the economy and also kind of growing their markets. And so for me, I tend to go in through the owner, and the owner likes having, you know, I kind of turn into a chief marketing officer more than just a digital agency. Because once a month we talk marketing, we talk process, we talk, you know, kind of where are they trying to go and what are they trying to achieve. So the onboarding tends to be not through marketing people. I do have one client who their marketing and sales sides don't communicate. And unfortunately, I'm placed in the middle, which, that can be a little interesting.
Yeah,
to say the least. But I, again, with this marketing process, I think it really begins to open the door. And so we're kind of in early days on that particular project.
Got it. Nice. Well, Tom, I thought we'd get into a bunch of other stuff, but SmartMarketing is kind of, it's been a great and interesting, and I definitely got a lot of notes down here. Is there anything else that's exciting to you right now that you'd like to talk about in the last few minutes of this podcast?
I would, Matt. I've gotten very, very interested in accessibility websites. Unfortunately, I got to know all about it because a client got sued and needed to have support. And I think that accessibility on websites, ADA compliance, is a growing legal issue. More and more companies are getting sued for it. I got into it because you and I have a client who both, we share a client who does ADA compliance for physical buildings and, you know, parking lots, et cetera, and they were getting inquiries about websites. And the thing I'd like to tell digital agencies, if they're listening to this is not only a liability for their customer, but there's also a growing liability for the digital agencies. If they tell someone or give someone a badge that says that website is ADA compliant and it's not, they are also being named in lawsuits. And so I've done a lot of research on it. I believe in live audits. I think they're critical. If you look through the steps that you have to go through to become a compliant, if you've been sued, it's a 10-to-1 difference in cost. It makes a website more expensive to be ADA compliant. The programmers have to be trained. You have to have a court certified auditing company, you know, verify and give a letter of compliance. So it is expensive, but instead of a $25,000 bill, if you get sued, it's $100,000+ bill. So I just want to put that out to all your digital agencies that they really should start doing some research on this, if nothing else, to make sure that their D&O insurance doesn't get smacked by Arizona E&O insurance. The Arizona mission doesn't get smacked by a lawsuit that involves accessibility and websites.
So this is definitely a topic that Matt's brought up before, and you and Matt are obviously working together. But as a third party that's not dealt with this, what are first steps that I can take? What tools and resources are available to so that we can start implementing this with our in-house clients?
It starts by that's a very good question. I think the tool is you got to get trained. You got to know what to look for. There's some real basic things you have to do that, you know, are straightforward, like you have to have an accessibility policy along with, you know, next year there are going to be growing lawsuits on digital privacy lawsuits in the state of California because of the law that comes into practice in 2020. That same policy you need to have there. So you need to talk to a lawyer and see what that looks like. You need to have a comment on your website saying that here's a big phone number to call. We're sensitive to accessibility and we want you to call us if there's a problem. So those are two first really easy steps to take. But at the end of the day, the problem is, and again, Matt, I'm going to have you speak to this a little bit too, is that it's not just the way the website looks, it's the way the website's programmed. And you've got to set up your programming so that if a reader, they're called JAWS is the most common one, when it reads the website, it's very clear that you're on the navigation, you're on the first, you know, you're on file, underneath file is save as, you know, blah, 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 blah. So it's not only the way the website looks, but it's how it's coded. Is that a fair way to say it, Matt?
Yes, definitely. And so, yeah, you need to take into account if, you know, somebody gets to your website and maybe they're not able to operate a mouse and they can only operate the keyboard and they need to be able to tab through the content. And so if you didn't set up the website properly, you know, through coding, you know, somebody's going to tab, and they're not going to be able to get to the right content. And so, and you need to be able to, you know, explain different things, what images are. You know, if somebody is blind, you know, they're not going to be able to see what a picture is. So, you know, in the text, in the code, that picture needs to be described. And so, yeah, those are some of the big things. Color contrast too, you know, if somebody's colorblind, you know, they might not be able to see certain text on buttons. And so there are some great accessibility tools out there. And there's a Chrome extension, and we'll list it in the show notes. I can't think of the tool off the top of my head, but we'll have them in the show notes. And yeah, you can actually pop in your website or an image, and it'll tell you, you know, your contrast is, you know, too high, too low here. You need to fix this. And like Tom said, there are some great scanners online, and we'll list those in the show notes as well. I think that's a great way to start with the scanners. But like Tom said, you know, there are companies out there that actually, you know, and Tom and I are working with one that actually has, you know, people on staff that are, that do have disabilities that do, are using these readers. And for them to like go through the website is really kind of the real way to catch everything.
And do you have any training resources that you could recommend?
Well, my recommendation is to go look up a, so just if I've got a few minutes, a couple things I'd like to say. First of all, the nice thing is that the laws were dodgy about this, but people were getting sued till about 2017. There really wasn't a good track for what companies should do. And Worldwide Web Consortium came up with a thing called the World Consortium Access Guide 2.0 AA. And really, that's the place to start, is to look at that guide. Again, it's WCAG 2.0 AA and 2.1 AA. And that's really where what people should read, because those are that's the guidelines that, you know, we as programmers cannot stop people from getting sued. All we can do is give them a good defense. And a good defense is following these guidelines, which all the legal experts are following, which is this WCAG 2.0 AA. So it's really important to understand is that as programmers, we cannot stop people from getting sued. From what I understand, Target gets sued every year for access. So their programmers are working full time to try to help. But all they can do is provide a good defense, number one. Number two is that I think when we're talking to our clients, they may not want to spend that money. But let me give you some good reasons why they should think about it. Number one is that 10,000 people are becoming turning 65 every year in the United States. And those people all are going to have growing accessibility issues. The second thing is that there's at least 52 million people that have these kind of problems. And that's a huge market. So if you want to expand your market, one easy way to do this is make your website the most accessible. Number three is that if you do it up front, there's a 10-to-1 savings if you program before you get yourself in trouble. And the third is that it reduces risk. Like I said, it's going to give you the good defense. So those are four good reasons why any business should consider making their website more accessible.
Yeah, I would. You know, it would make sense doing it as a start from scratch type of service. But usually we're stepping in and taking over something that was built previously. And having to convert something is where the huge costs come in.
You bet. So I'm really passionate about that one right now. Smarketing, I think that smarketing, I call marketing smart. I think that ADA is marketing smart too. So that's why it all kind of fits together for me.
Yeah. And privacy groups right along with the accessibility.
You bet.
Yeah.
Yep. Nice. Tom, well, so at this point, why don't you give us a little plug? Also, why don't you tell the audience about your band as well?
Well, the world famous Misplaced Priorities have been, going since 1996, which makes us one of the longest running bands in the world, because most bands break up before that. And we've raised over $1 million for charity. We're an auction item. We go out with a taco cart for a party for 30 with margaritas and a live band. We play classic rock. We try to learn 10 new songs every year, so we're not playing the same songs over and over again. We're also trying to cover different decades, because we're finding that people at these auctions now are kind of 80s babies, so they want to hear 80s music. So we're trying to learn some of that versus just 60s and 70s. And it's been really fun. You know, it's hard for our wives to get to, some say the wives named the band Misplaced Priorities because we spend too much time doing that. We think it's Misplaced Priorities because we don't spend enough time playing music. So but it's been a fun gig, and it's nice being able to raise money for charity, you know?
Yeah, I've been in and out of bands since I was in high school, and my last band broke up because I had a child.
I started my band when my kids all went to college, so there you go.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. My next band, 18 years from now.
Nice. Well, thanks so much, Tom. We'll definitely we'll have links to your websites in the show notes. And thank you so much for being on our show. And definitely excited about everything that you talked about. So thank you again, Tom.
My pleasure. It's been really exciting. You guys are doing a great job. I think this is going to be a great service, and I hope it's a successful blog. And I'm honored to be part of your team.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Buy me back again.
We definitely will.
Bye.
All right. Bye, Tom. Thank you.
All right, Matt. So now let's dive into a little bit of behind the scenes. So, right. Matt, you sent me an email the week before last. Last week is an issue that I'll bring up towards the end of the show. But why don't you read that email, and it'll help explain to the audience who we are, what we're doing.
Yeah, so over the weekend or a couple weekends ago, I was telling a friend of mine about the show, and he was like, "Oh, but I understand what's on the show," and I was like, "Oh, do you know what SEO is?" And he said, "No." So, anyways, the email to Jeff was just, do we need to kind of dive in deeper to what we're talking about, or give exclamations, just talk about certain topics a little more open, just more understandable so people can understand them. So anyway, so SEO is one of them, which for those of our listeners that are new and that don't know what SEO is, SEO stands for search engine optimization. And it's something that both Jeff and my company provide as a service for our clients, that we basically, in short, we optimize websites so that when people go to Google and other search engines, Jeff, do other people use other search engines still?
Well, I still have to optimize for them. So
yeah, we still optimize for them. Bing, people still use Bing and Yahoo. We optimize the websites. So when people go to Google and they search for a service or a product or, whatever they're searching for that our customers have on their websites, we want our customers to come up ideally on the first page of Google, and that is not an ad. So that is kind of what SEO is. And, we optimize websites, we post content on a regular basis. We also we do off-site SEO, where we work on link building and build links to the website and optimize other profiles that point back to the business. So anyways, that was kind of...
So the point of your email was, do we need to dumb it down to reach a broader audience? Correct? Was that, yes. Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, definitely. So I think Jeff and I were both kind of, at this point, we're still trying to really kind of figure out...
This is kind of like that terrible Facebook movie. We don't know what it is yet. All we know is here's what I enjoy about the podcast is that we get to talk shop. And back to your friend not knowing what SEO was. My family doesn't know anything of what I do. They barely know what Photoshop is, and they think it's just something magical and not an actual tool. So, and they use it as a verb. So, what my response was is that I love to talk shop, and we don't know what market we're going to appeal to yet, but anybody that has anything to promote online is going to gain value from just overhearing a conversation. So that's why I tend to want to do this and want to get this information out there, because you and I feed off of each other and we learn from each other, and the audience can learn from that as well.
Yep. And that's, really, I mean, when Jeff and I started this show, a little over a month ago, we were just chatting, and talking industry, and it was, yeah, just an hour of us going back and forth, and, oh, have you heard about this tool, or have you heard about this, or have you heard about the latest Google update? And it was like, we loved it, and we're like, let's make a podcast, and let's share this information.
We've both been in
the industry for, you know, each of us over 20 years.
Yeah, you came into the office for a visit, and we just talked shop the whole time and enjoyed it, so that's... You know, that's what I think this is all about. And if our audience, you can take action if you want to hear us talk about a specific subject, or if you have a suggestion, or if you just want to pick our brains. We are on Instagram and Twitter, both handles. I changed the Instagram one so it matches the Twitter now, Matt. So
okay.
I didn't tell you that, but they're at Digital Rage FM. So that's where you can reach us and just ask us anything, or, you know, switch topics, or, you know, because I don't think that dumbing down the podcast would appeal to me, because one of my podcasts did that. One of their last episodes was why your site must switch to HTTPS and how to do it.
Right.
And I was like, how is this going to have any value for me? Because that's pretty much an automatic, and that decision is made before you even find your client. So it was a real turnoff, and I think I unsubscribed from that podcast right away. Just because, okay, they're not appealing to me anymore. I'm done. So we're probably going to be, at least these early episodes, unless we shift for any reason, we're going to appeal to people that are in the digital marketing space.
Yep.
So.
No, definitely. And we will be, you know, since this is our first podcast, we'll definitely be sharing about our podcasting experience as we go, and, you know, hurdles that we meet along the road. And like today, I was on my different computer, and my mic that I usually use at home did not work with my computer. So today the audio might be a little poor for me. Anyways.
Yeah. And this is something that we want to be consistent with. So there's going to be some times where the podcast is going to be, you know, we're going to have to do it mobile. We're going to have to do it on the road. So, but this is one of those things where we're going to still create an episode. We're not going to be held up by technology or vacations or anything else. We can still get it done. So on that, you know, more behind the scenes is that we're also still not decided, you know, by the time you hear this, we'll be decided, but we're still not decided on a podcast host provider. We've got on the short list is Libsyn, which is probably industry standard, SoundCloud, which is super popular, especially on the free price range. Spotify, which we mentioned last show, was just acquired two podcast content creation companies. And then Simplecast, which is what the new Facebook podcast is using. So we'll keep you updated on what and why we choose them. But yeah, that's it for that. So Matt, you got any news?
As far as just a quick company update, we are getting close to launching our new eMarketer website. So excited about that. And yeah, expect probably by the time this show is live, our new site should be up, I would hope. We're shooting for the end of this month, which is, we're in February right now.
Nice. That's when we wanted to launch this podcast.
Right. Right. So yeah, as you know, as usual, things are getting pushed back a little bit. I did come across a cool code, and I thought I would share this with you, Jeff, and also our audience. So it's actually code that I found on Git, because I've been really diving into Git and kind of, you know, making sure that our developers are updating our code on a regular basis for our different projects, and just kind of getting into the formalities of that, because that's something we really haven't been doing as a best practice. So as I was diving into the Git world, I did find a piece of code that actually can make your site disappear over time. So I think it's called the client, if a client doesn't pay script. And so basically you install some scripts on the site and you can put a timeline. So, you know, you could say 2 weeks from now. So each day the website will get a little bit little bit whiter until it eventually disappears.
They're doing what, opacity on the body tag?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, that's pretty aggressive. I've never been that aggressive, but also I don't really, all of my clients, I make sure that they pay their own hosting and own manage. So, you know, my job is work for hire. And, you know, once they make the payment at launch, or they pay for maintenance as we go. So yep. I wouldn't imagine that I would need something like that, but I imagine hosting companies, or, you know, even domain companies, you know, that need to get paid. Yep.
Yeah. I can't see myself using it either. It was funny that, yeah. So anyways, it's kind of, just been busy working on a bunch of different projects. It's been, as far as the podcast goes, it's been great to reach out to people, and the response rate that we've been getting as far as people that want to be on the show has been high. So it's been fun to email people, and everybody's excited about the show. So it's been nice to get such good positive feedback, and people that are, you know, we've got, you know, a couple more guests lined up, and more in the wings. So
yeah,
excited about that.
We got a double hitter tomorrow.
Yeah. Back to back tomorrow.
Yeah. So my piece of news, related to what we, discussed last, a few minutes ago, was that, last week had to cancel the show, which also had an interview that we rescheduled for tomorrow. But, how do I start this? So on Wednesday of last week, my son woke up with a fever, and he has fevers all the time. He gets sick all the time. We didn't think anything of it. I got home and you know, he felt pretty hot, hotter than normal. Didn't eat his dinner, you know, typical of a sick kid. And I was holding him in my lap, and we were trying to give him medicine, and he was fighting it. And while he was fighting it, his temperature shot up and he had a febrile seizure. So I didn't understand what it was. And it's something that every parent should know about, because I know that it's common, but the first time it happens to you, it's life-changing. So I thought, from my perspective, my son was dying in my arms. And 'cause his eyes stay open. He doesn't blink. His eyes are dilated. He's foaming at the mouth and just convulsing. What else are you supposed to think? This is nothing that I've ever thought of. I've never heard from any other parent. And this is not something that I would ever consider normal. Even if it happens again, it's still going to freak me out, because the way that it looks and appears. We found out it's very common. I posted my whole ordeal on Facebook, and even friends on Facebook said, oh, happened to my daughter, happened to my son. Oh, it had, you know, and all of them around the 2-year-old range. So it's funny that most of the people that have contacted me have said that this is the age where it happened to their kids. So we spent the rest of the week in the hospital. We went to Little Company Mary and then transferred to Miller Children's Hospital in Long Beach. And he recovered quickly. He had a fever till about midday Thursday. Fever was gone. And then Friday woke up crazed, ate all his dinner or his breakfast, and was ready to get out of the hospital. So they released us, you know, middle of the day on Friday, and once he got back home, he was super excited, and he's been great ever since. So I think my biggest takeaway is knowing this would have been a lot easier on me, because this took years off of my life. So any parents out there with a child somewhere around 2, and they say they can happen up to 6 years old, these fever related seizures are a real thing, and manage fevers properly and quickly. As soon as a fever comes on, give the Tylenol, you know, undress the baby, use wet rags, put them in a bath, a lukewarm bath, anything you can do to lower that fever. Because from what I understand, even though it would have been a long shot, we probably could have avoided the seizure had we lowered his temperature faster. So that was that's my major takeaway and my advice to parents.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Jeff. Man, my heart goes out to you guys. And I have a daughter too, or I have a kid, and she's 22 years old now. But yeah, I mean, it's such a scary place to be when that happens.
So glad it's over, obviously.
Yeah.
And better for knowing that these things happen. And so I think, you know, more awareness of this should be out there so that new parents, you know, don't really lose years off their life like we did.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right, man. Well, I don't think I have anything else. I know we'll be doing some back-to-back shows, so maybe I'll have some more stuff to share tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good. So that's it. We'll sign off. So thank you for listening very much.
And thank you, everyone. Thank you.
And remember to rate and review.
For show notes and information, go to digitalrage.fm. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @DigitalRageFM. And please give us a rate and review. We sincerely appreciate it.